Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Due diligence on Classic Business is brought to you by Deal Leaders International, leaders in mergers and acquisitions. Well, from the rugby field to the freezing field, our guests today may not be James Small, but Jake Small certainly has built something just as fierce and fast-moving, albeit at sub-zero temperatures. Chiliweni Cold Storage is one of those South African family-run businesses that quietly powers the food economy, ensuring that your frozen chicken nuggets and burger patties make it from factory to fryer in perfect condition. Founded in 2004 by Jakes and joined a decade later by his actuarially inclined son, Ivan Sutic, the business has grown into a powerhouse in refrigerated logistics. Now with private equity backing from Vuna Partners, Chiliweni is entering a new phase of expansion, of transformation and of legacy building and an institutionalization without losing that spirit that made it great, that entrepreneurial spirit. I caught up with Jakes and Ivan to unpack the origin story, the decision to partner with private equity, which at times can be fraught, and what it really takes to build and keep building a legacy business in South Africa's cold chain economy. So stay tuned. This is what they had to say. Well, Jakes, great to have you on. Not quite James Small, but you've made your own mark in a very different kind of high performance field. How did Chiliweni come about?
From leaving school, I started in the meat industry at the old meat port in Abercourt. It was an operation at that stage. So I went through the process of meat grading, classification, got involved with production side of it, and eventually into the warehousing side, servicing third-party clients within. And after about 2-3 years of doing that and growing the path, one of the customers or clients that I serviced at that stage developed and built his own in-house cold storage, the one situated in Roodepoort, and he invited me to start running the cold store for him. And from there onwards, I was involved with that about 10 years, and eventually, just one day decided it's time to move on. Started off my own facilities, started renting facilities, because, you know, with our industry, it's very capital intense. You know, you need to build up the full warehouse, refrigeration, economics of scale. So the bigger you build it, the cheaper it becomes. So started renting a facility in Pretoria West, about 500 pallets at that stage. Second facility in Alberton of another 600 pallets. From there on, moved to Harriedale, about 1,000 pallets. And then eventually ended up buying my own facility in City Deep. So that was the path for Chiliweni. I bought the facility on that site, and about 4 years down the line, started expanding in that facility. And from there onwards, we came to Randport, where we added with one of our customers supporting us for a nice 10-year contract, developed another facility, about 12,000 pallets in Germiston. And then recently, with the Vuna relationship that we started off, we acquired another facility in City Deep of another 25,000 pallets. So that was the growth span over the last 20 years.
Remarkable. What was the landscape, the market of cold storage like back in 2004? I mean, you've clearly evolved and grown almost exponentially over the last few years, but what was missing and how did you view the opportunity 20 years ago?
The thing is, at that stage, it was very orientated regarding traders. So the market and the value and fluctuation of specifically imported product versus local produced product was the driver. So it depends on which way the market went. The importers bring more stock in because there was a shortage on local market, or the local market dropped prices to compete with the imported market. So that was the big driver for requiring or the demand for storage at that stage. And I think the flexibility of driving the market and customer services was the big criteria at that stage that made our business a success.
Mm. Ivan, I want to bring you in on you joining the family business. You left actuarial science at Discovery, in fact, to join the family business. So it's quite a big move from actuarial science into something like cold storage, a lot more operationally intense. What motivated that move, and what was the pitch your stepdad made to you, or was it the other way around?
When was that? That was back in 2013. So I was, I'd done all my actuarial studies. I was working in healthcare at that stage. I wanted to move over more into the investment space. I just realized after 3.5 years, healthcare wasn't really for me. So I took a bit of time off, went traveling for a bit. And then when I came back home, I was going to look at some roles in the investment space. And some old man said, "Well, you know, while you're looking, come help out for a few weeks." And that was back in 2013, 12 years ago now. So I guess my time management hasn't been the best, but no, it was. Look, it was a good move. I think the business was at a lot smaller stage back then. I guess between myself and my old man, I brought a sort of a different skill set to the business. So we've got kind of a good complementary skill set there. And it's really just been growth, growth, and more growth over the years. And more than enough to keep me busy and not really kind of the path I'd planned initially, but I think it's all worked out for the best in the long run.
You know, in business, there's this great saying as well that often opportunity leads strategy. You know, you may start out with the best vision board, an idea of where your career is going to go, or where a business is going to go. And often an opportunity presents itself that just takes you in a completely different direction. What did you walk into, Ivor, when you look at the business back then? And were there things you say, complementary skill sets that needed modernizing or professionalizing or just scaling up? And yeah, maybe you can just take me through that journey that you've walked over the last 10 years.
So I guess when was that? Back in 2013, I think we had the Fortune Street facility at that stage. I think that was before we'd expanded it. So I think it was about 2,500 pallets then. Then in 2016, we worked on expanding that one up to about 5,000. 2018, we worked towards we opened the Randport one, added about another 10,000 pallets here. 2022, we moved into the other portion in Merino. And last year, now the other part of that. So I think now today we're sitting on about 40,000 pallets frozen. I guess from my side, it was really kind of the analytical mindset, perhaps, in terms of sort of running through all the details and optimizing a lot of the numbers, the systems, those types of things. And I guess over the years, we've really, you know, I mean, if you, yeah, we don't really often stop to think about it that much either. It's just kind of day to day onto the next thing. And I guess when you stop and reflect on it, I mean, our focus has always just been on delivering the best quality service that we could. I guess, you know, understanding the details in terms of what our clients needed. So I suppose in terms of us being a family business, it was, we always kind of had the flexibility to make decisions quickly and to tailor our solutions towards our clients in terms of what their needs were. I guess that's always been the plan, to really just solve as many problems for them as possible, not offer kind of some standardized take it or leave it product, you know, in bounds. And that's really been our focus all the way through, is just trying to run the best quality operation that we could. I guess that's really what's driven our growth.
Maybe, Jakes, you could just share a little bit more on the evolution. If you look at what you said, starting off serving meat traders, how did you manage to evolve the offering from warehousing into broader logistics and handling services from those early days of just kind of serving meat traders?
I think the business model evolved by itself because, you know, all the producers and even the end customers, you know, it's all integrated. You got your suppliers for raw material into the production lines. The production lines manufacture their internal finished goods that goes to the retailer, but they need at the same time the housing for the finished goods before it goes to market again. So it's just integrating all of those services. And the more you can join the links together and be able to facilitate all parties and aspects of the supply chain, that I think was the biggest driver. So it's just putting that links together, the service offering, making it easier for the guys, less paperwork, less administration, you know, less moving stock around, you know, just the integrity and building the relationship throughout the full cold chain. I think that's what's made a difference.
If you were to look at the relationship specifically of evolving from a kind of father-son dynamic into a working business partnership, Were there any generational clashes in leadership style or decisions? And maybe you could talk about how that relationship evolved from where it was to where it is today.
I think we always had a good relationship prior to business itself. And I think it just transpired into the business model as well. You know, I'm very, can't say cowboy-like, but you need to take the risk, you know, entrepreneur. You need to, you know, sometimes if I sit down and I reflect on if I did the calculations on it, I wouldn't have made the same decisions that I did. Yeah. But, you know, that drives the business model again. And it's always nice to put the two together, you know, from, I always say, even as my conscience, you know, so I'll take the risk factor and say, we need to proceed within this avenue and that avenue, take on these chances, and he'll guide, you know, the process to say, okay, let's do it this way and that way, growth path, time frame, all the rest of the stuff. So I think that's the biggest benefit that we had within the growth of the business.
And Ivan, just to bring you in on that point, how do you resolve conflict if there is ever a situation where Jake's wants to go for something, as he said, you know, he wants to drive the business forward, a bit of a maverick approach, and you're looking at it saying, well, we need guardrails here. Have you had a moment where you've had conflict, and maybe you could just share a little more into how you've resolved it?
Oh, yeah, Chish. I mean, I think we've had plenty of those over the years, you know, on a regular basis, which I think is what makes for a good kind of, you know, we've had a good family relationship the whole time, but I think it's also what makes for a good business relationship in that there's no beating around the bush. You know, we'll say it how it is. We'll have arguments and fights about things, you know, get our viewpoints across and, you know, listen to each other and figure out, you know, the best way forward. Yeah, I guess I am the more cautious analytical type. But also with that, you know, you realize there's risks to not growing a business as well. You do have to grow in a calculated manner. So yeah, there's that good dynamic there. I think the main thing is that we don't really keep quiet when there are issues. We'll talk it out. We'll thrash it out. Sometimes it gets loud and heated and back and forth, you know. But, you know, I think if you look at it over the years, we've done really well on that basis in terms of, you know, driving the business forward.
Yeah, that openness, that honesty and that transparency, I think key critical ingredients in any relationship and partnership, not least between family members within a family-run business. Now, let's talk about the big moment, and I don't know who wants to pick up on this first, and the decision to partner with Vuna Partners. Why private equity? You know, why now? And whose decision was that, or was it a joint decision?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, if we think about it, over the years, I think we've been approached by quite a few private equity players over the years. And I guess it just never really made sense for us. It wasn't something we were that interested in. I think this time around, we got introduced to the Vuna Partner guys through Standard Bank Advisory. We were working with them on some other deals. And I think they sort of kind of found that relationship might be a good fit between the two. You know, I guess for us, sort of what's always been our difference is that we've been a tightly run family business. We've got the ability to make decisions quickly. You know, we don't have a lot of corporate red tape. We're not a very formal business in that sense. You know, if you come here to our boardroom, it's the kitchen and the balcony upstairs, and we'll make an agreement with our clients and we'll shake hands and that's how it's done, you know? And we didn't want to ruin that recipe in terms of just everything needing to, well, you know, this is what we can do and we can't really bend these things here. And okay, we'll get back to you in 2 weeks' time after a board meeting. And, you know, so we really didn't want to kind of ruin kind of that that made us what we are. And I guess, you know, you've poured your blood, sweat and tears into this business over, you know, 20 years for my old man and, you know, 12 years for me now. I guess we care about, it's sort of an extension of ourselves, you know, so we care about the business a lot in a personal sense. I think there are, you know, 140 odd employees reliant on us now as well. All of our clients also. So it's not just a business about numbers for us. And I guess that was the important thing, finding a partner that isn't just interested in the bottom line, but in terms of, you know, what we do and how we do it. So our goal in business has never been, you know, we never looked and thought, oh, these are our growth plans. We want to grow by this amount. We want to be the biggest in the market. You know, we've had these discussions. We want to be the best quality provider, you know, because it reflects on our kind of reputation. We don't want people to say, oh, you know, that's Chilaweni. They don't really know what they're doing. They don't look after your product very well. You know, we'd rather be the top quality provider. It doesn't mean we have to be the biggest. We just want to be really great at what we do. And so that was really kind of not wanting to dilute, I guess, the essence of what makes us what we are in terms of finding a partner. And so I think that's really what we found with the Vuna guys. And we had sort of long discussions about this back and forth. I mean, obviously, understanding it from their side also, you don't really know who you're partnering with at the outset, but yeah. You can kind of gauge who the people are and what's important to them. And I think we managed to get that across that, you know, I think our key priority is, and, you know, that was a thing from them as well in terms of they're backing our business because of us. It doesn't make sense for them to come in here and, you know, change everything that we're doing completely. And I think that's been the biggest thing from us, being able to maintain running the business the way that we have, obviously with some changes with the guys on board.
And the very interesting, Ivan, you're talking about that emotional attachment to Jake's to bring you in. I think often bringing in outside capital can feel like you're inviting a stranger to a Saturday braai or a Sunday lunch. And so you've got to navigate that emotional and relational side of the decision within a family-owned business. But why private equity versus, say, just going and, you know, adding debt to the balance sheet? Because often, you know, people look at private equity and they say, oh, well, you know, it's a very expensive form of equity funding if you want to grow the business. Did you want to take some risk off the table? What was the thinking at the time when you thought of private equity?
Well, then the opportunity presents itself, exactly what Ivan said, you know, and that's the same approach how we do business. We do business with the people, you know, a company is a name and that will come and go, the drivers within that company. We try to build the relationship with the individuals and address those things. And that's exactly the same viewpoint that we got from Vuna as well. You know, they got involved with us. What does the business mean to us? How do we approach it? What makes it successful? You know, they started learning some of the customers, understanding their business models. So they actually got involved with the business itself and not the number side of it, you know, which was the first different approach that we had from any one of the guys ever approach us, you know, from an equity perspective. And I think that was the first, I don't know, tick that me and Ivan realized throughout the guys. And we had a, like Ivan saying, you know, on the stoop, we had a cup of coffee and we discussed everything, but it was like discussing it with a long lost brother, yeah. You know, almost that effect. So we caught up and we ran through everything. So that was the approach. That was the difference definitely for us, because exactly what you said, you know, over the last years, we weren't driven. We didn't need the cash flow. We didn't want to grow it. We didn't. It was none of that. Yes, there was some risk that got taken off the table, obviously, with their involvement. But I think for the benefit that they brought to the company, the viewpoint, you know, it's a rat race. Every day you get up, you do the same thing, you monitor the same aspects, you manage the same people, you look after the same customers. You know, it's a everyday routine thing. But just having them involved in the business and understanding what needs to get done, have a different viewpoint aspect, not to think changes of the business model itself, but just look at stuff at a different way and a different angle through different eyes. Mm. I think that's what added the value to us. And I think that's definitely why the relationship works as well.
Ivan, coming back to, you know, that whole negotiation process, you know, on the stop, meeting them, having a cup of coffee, getting to know them, was it a fairly quick process? And when you look at it, what's been interesting or revealing maybe to you, having a financial investor, you know, on the board with you, and what's been maybe the biggest insight that they've brought as an outsider into the business that you've looked at and it's sort of helped you extract value from a sense?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think in terms of kind of sussing out who the people are, I think that was a fairly quick process. My old man and myself were both on the same page there. You know, like you said, it's difficult to let someone in to something that you've spent your life building. So I think that, you know, we got a good gut feel from the outset. But obviously the process itself, I mean, it took quite a while. It took several months, close to a year to get finalized. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen, a lot of the due diligences that take place. And I think, you know, that all worked out. Yeah, I think you look, the rationale behind it is also, I mean, we have spent a lot of time building up this business and, you know, it's been this family business that's reliant on myself and my old man. And I guess you also reach a point where you start thinking about, while we place a lot of sort of personal pride and are closely tied to it. You do want it to be it's like a living organism, and you want it to be able to grow and survive without you, you know? So in a way, you have to prepare to let it go and to build it up to be able to function so it doesn't collapse into nothing. And so I think as part of that, and we're currently going through that phase in terms of formalizing a lot of the processes and, I'd say, you know, introducing some red tape, you know, not to the degree that it hinders the operations, but I think in terms of a lot of the kind of checks and balances and kind of good practices for running an organization of this scale, you know, I think that's a lot of the skill set that that the guys bring from that point of view in terms of kind of being on the board with us and overseeing a lot of the regulatory and governance and sure, strategic things as well. Look, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're involved and we have a lot of discussions about a lot of those things as well. I think, you know, the day-to-day ops and stuff we take care of mostly. But, you know, definitely in that regard, you know, the benefits are there. And then also, yeah, with the view of taking a little bit of the risk off the table, especially, you know, for my folks after all this time. And I guess the helping with our empowerment credentials as well, given the scale of the company that we are now also. Yeah, so definitely, yeah. Definitely benefits on all those fronts.
Yeah, and I see the first independent audit with Forvis Mazars, obviously a milestone. You're on track with your first BEE rating as well. And so all of those are governance, but have they also surfaced anything outside of what you had anticipated going through those processes? Because it was interesting hearing you talk about what the company means to you. And it's not just growth. It's about more than that. So maybe you can talk to me about what that more is, because cold storage on the outside looks like a very tough environment, physically demanding, operating around the clock. Yeah, how do you keep your people engaged and motivated and put that kind of purpose into the organization as well?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I guess that is a big part of it in that we've grown quite, you know, rapidly over the years to a scale now where, you know, we do 40,000 pallets across four facilities here in Joburg. And it gets to a point where, I mean, it is all driven on a day-to-day basis by my old man and myself, but it gets to a point where that's a good model for a small business or a growing business up to a certain point. And then it becomes really difficult to manage, you know, from there if you don't have those structures and sort of formalities in place. I think it really kind of puts a lot of strain on people. You know, thankfully, that's, I think, a huge strength of ours we have. And we've been fortunate to have great people with us along the way that have all kind of picked up the slack and, you know, and we've all pulled along together. But yeah, you get to a point where you kind of reach a ceiling operating on that model where, okay, everyone just, you know, take care of what you need to day to day. There's no formal structures and processes for a lot of things. And so I think for everyone's kind of personal sanity and for the health of the business as well, and for scalability, you know, to be able to operate and to expand to different geographical regions as well, you've got to have those structures and those processes properly established. So yeah, I think that's just the, you know, the natural life cycle of the business. We're going through it carefully and in a very sort of detail focused and bespoke manner. We've been working on that for quite a while, and I think it's still a, you know, a project that'll go on for some time, because through that we don't want to lose the essence of what makes Chilweni Chilweni, you know, the special focus and attention to our clients and the attention to detail and the great quality service offering and that personal touch. So yeah, we want to preserve that as far as possible, but also sort of codify it into our business and just enable the scaling of the business
grow. Well, I mean, and when you look at the life cycle of any business, it does get to a point where without those systems and processes, the ability to scale is hindered, and you can scale into complexity that can cause the business to collapse. So how big can it get, Ivan? I mean, I know you said it's not all about growth, but a big part of business and sustainability is growth. And, you know, if you're growing, you're adding more employees, you're adding new sites, more pallets, it's an exciting prospect. Just talk to me about your expansion and how you see the future playing out. How big can Chilweni get?
These are discussions we have quite a lot as well. Look, I mean, the sky's the limit. I think we've gone through a big growth phase now recently in terms of revamping one of our new facilities that we're sort of just kicking off at the moment. So I think for the remainder of the year, I think we're in a bit of a consolidation phase and just kind of getting everything settled there. But look, in terms of, we don't have kind of specific targets in terms of that. I think, like I said, our priority is to build our foundations and our systems in place that we can grow the business without impacting the quality of the service offering that we have. Like I said, I think that when we've got the comfort that what makes us Chilweni, you know, is a model that we can sort of plug and play and scale to a degree without diluting that brand and that reputation, then we'll take that growth sort of organically as it comes.
Jakes, just as we're reaching the end of our time here, what are you most proud of when you look back on this 20-year journey? And to build on what Yvonne was saying, you know, what kind of legacy are you hoping to build on? And where do you see the business in the next kind of 5 to 10 years?
Exactly what Yvonne is saying, you know, that customer service and integrity that we've maintained throughout the years. Same with our employees also. You know, we've got third generation of staff members with us, you know, where the grandfather and the father and now the youngsters that just left school is joining the organization and the business itself. You know, it's nice to see that we've made a difference, not just within the market, but also within the lives of all our employees. You know, that if we have a braai or we have a function, everyone's playing soccer together. And, you know, it's a nice get together. It's a typical family orientated environment. And I think that's the nicest part, you know, looking back into everything, that you've made a difference within the people. And the people believed in you and the people carried the business and they're picking the rewards as much as we do. So that's very nice from my perspective to know. And also that we've kept a finger on it. So the controls is in place. The balance is there. We've got customers supporting us over the last 10, 15 years already. So somewhere along the line, we must do something right. That the guys are staying with us. You know, sometimes, especially in business these days, the rants and cents is what drives the business. But, you know, it's sometimes also not just about the numbers. It's how you operate, who you get involved with the pot, you know, what you offer out there, integrity. That's the most important thing. And it's nice to know that throughout all the years, that is still there.
Just one thing before we go and maybe reflect on some lessons learned for other family-owned businesses to consider when they approach private equity. And it's been so interesting hearing you talk about the private equity model because I often think that private equity does get an unfairly bad rap. And when implemented well, it really is a fantastic way to help institutionalize certain governance processes, add insight, another strategic lens, and also just de-risk certain elements of the business. But I want to talk operationally. And Yvonne, maybe, I don't know if you're best placed or Jake's here, to talk to me about cold storage in South Africa today is obviously reliant on continuous power, continuous refrigeration. How have you managed through, you know, the periods of very severe load shedding to where we are today, where, you know, we can't even fully say that load shedding is 100% dealt with? We still have recurring bouts of it from time to time. So how has that impacted your business and how have you solved for the kind of SA specific challenges?
Yeah, I mean, sure. Well, with a lot of diesel, you know, all of our facilities have full backup power. We try to be as smart with the energy as we can. You know, we've got solar plants on the bulk of our facilities as well. And yeah, unfortunately, it's just part of, you know, doing business in South Africa over the last few years. You know, you're running giant warehouses that are keeping food frozen at minus 25. So you just, you can't afford any of those hiccups. So yeah, a lot of cost, a lot of diesel. You know, I think that's but I mean, it's no difference to what everyone throughout the chain has experienced. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen that get better over the last little while, holding thumbs that that will be maintained and improve over time. But, yeah, that's just what you have to do. On your first point, in terms of partnering with private equity and perhaps, you know, them getting a bit of a bad rep and how do we kind of make that call? Yeah, I would say it is a tough one. They can get a bad rep, especially when you've got a tightly held family business that you care about very deeply. You don't just look at it as some commercial entity for, you know, for money-making purposes. And I guess that's maybe kind of the lens you might view a lot of private equity players through. And and certainly many of the ones that we met over the years, kind of that's just the vibe that we got. And so I would say we were very cautious in that regard. I would say what really sort of got it across the line for us was that, and you know, I'm not plugging Standard Bank here by any means, but genuinely that is the answer there. We were working with them on another deal and this kind of came up as an option and they did the the introductions, I think, based on understanding, you know, who we were and our values as well.
Yeah.
And so that they introduced us to the Vuna guys. And like I said, we hit it off from there. We sort of saw eye to eye on that. So, yeah, I would say that was really it. We kind of had a trusted advisory partner in that regard to pair us up and sort of, I guess, maybe be a sort of a neutral voice or a mediator in between to kind of get that relationship built when you're kind of really skeptical from your end in terms of, you know, trusting these guys at the other side of the table, because you're giving a lot to, you know, letting someone in. So yeah, I would say, in my view, that was really the what got it across the line for us. But yeah, you know, a great resource to have and a good part of growing a business when you get to a certain point. I think we know what we're doing in the cold storage space, operationally, the market as a whole. But I think, you know, in terms of taking a business to another level, in terms of a lot of the regulatory and governance and board things, and also just, you know, just having another sounding board. I mean, they're also a really kind of smart bunch of guys with a lot of experience through a whole host of industries. You know, with in Chilwini, it's really myself and my old man at the board at the strategic level. So to just have that backup and that support as well, also hugely valuable. And like I say, to take the business to that next level so that we've got the comfort that we can build it up, that it can survive the long term, you know, without us. I think that would be great to see. It's tough to let go of these things the way that you have to. But I think the end result in terms of seeing it flourish without us kind of pulling all the strings all the time, that's what we have to achieve.
And that's, you know, beyond the tangible kind of capital that one can bring or governance, it's those networks, which are often intangible as well. Well, from a single cold store in Gauteng to a Foresight Logistics empire serving South Africa's frozen food giants, Chilwini's story is a great reminder that in business, just like in rugby, timing and teamwork and knowing when to pass the ball can make all the difference. Jake Small and Ivan Sutic, proof that legacy and innovation don't have to be at odds. They're building something that will last well beyond them with the kind of quiet resilience that's easy to underestimate until, of course, your delivery arrives perfectly unfrozen and late. That's when you'll realize just how important it is. Well, that's all from this edition of Classic Business. As always, I'm Michael Avery. Until next time, stay warm out there, or chilled if you're Chilwini. Due Diligence on Classic Business is brought to you by Deal Leaders, partnering with you. For the next episode of Due Diligence, listen to Classic Business next Tuesday around 6:40, brought to you by Deal Leaders International.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.